Blog Talk Radio.
College basketball fans, the College Ball Show is back. He's Marshall, I'm Chris, and we're here to discuss everything that is college basketball. Now, all of a sudden, we're sitting at about a month left of the season, give or take, you know, obviously including the conference tournaments and all that before Selection Sunday comes around. And, of course, the theme has been there's not great teams out there. There's not that one or two or top three teams that you just kind of put at a pedestal and the rest are kind of, you know, a step, if not a two full steps below them. And those are the favorites beyond upsets and injury and whatnot. But this year, parity. It is the NFL. It is parity right now. Week in and week out, and it keeps coming and coming and coming, and the waves of these Saturdays, if you look at, now don't get me wrong, when you have some Saturdays with some ranked teams going head to head, well, obviously that means you're going to have ranked teams lose. But beyond that, I mean, just, and I'll count the number out just going down the page here, you had a lot of upsets. We had a lot of tight endings. Of course, with tight endings, once in a while you get some shots that just amaze you, some shots that are amazing that aren't legal, and you also get some fouls. Right. You also get some fouls that that are kind of on either side where you're like, oh, you can't call that, or you had to call that, or whatever. The point is you had some guys on the line at the end of the game, and several things stand out about the last week, you know, last couple of days since Saturday, really. We did actually, because the NBA was down on Friday beyond the celebrity game, we did actually get some Friday college basketball in the Pac-12. But other than that, you know, kind of focusing on Saturday. But if you look at the last chunk of days, you had two 90-plus free throw shooters at the line with the game in hand, and one of them, we know very well, Buddy missed one of them, and one of them from Texas A&M, and I lost his name all of a sudden, but he's a 93% free throw shooter with like 1.5 seconds left on the clock. 93% free throw shooter, down by one, Texas A&M was. He has to at least make one to go overtime, more than likely. I mean, there's 1.1 seconds, so you never know. They could Derek Fisher it or whatever, but he missed both of them. Unbelievable. So you had two, like I said, 90-plus guys on the free throw line that missed. So we had just all sorts of stuff to talk about, Marshall. And I know we're last couple weeks, we didn't do the segment we're going to bring back. As we kind of make it through these games, you're going to list, or not list, but kind of, you know, as we are talking about a game or as we talk about the recap portion of the show, we're going to talk about the top five road wins. And, you know, we talk about that a lot, how much the home crowd can really play a humongous part in the action down the stretch, just overall. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. It makes a huge difference in college basketball. But just the last couple of days of, you know, I hate to say like it's mayhem because, you know, number one team this week didn't go down. You know, that's something of a surprise. Same with the number two. Usually we've been knocking out number one and number two on some of these Saturdays or weekends by the time we get to the next show. What a crazy weekend, man. What a fun weekend of college basketball. And it is really heating up when it's really cold, usually around this time.
This Saturday was just awesome, Chris. You know, I really thought that the Saturday prior for kind of show prep or quality of games was going to be awesome with the SEC and the Big 12 Challenge. And on paper, you could say from looking at scores that this past Saturday was just as entertaining. I mean, I had the day off, so I basically just sat on my couch and watched basketball all day. along with watching that marvelous Klay Thompson shooting. I mean, that was just beautiful. So the NBA did offer a nice piece, but you had college
basketball.
Oh,
and by the way, the dunk contest, too. I'll mention that for non-Warrior faithfuls, because that dunk contest was ridiculous, too. It needs to be brought up before the three-point contest, honestly.
So I'm getting ready to watch games, and the first thing game I want to watch is, South Carolina, Kentucky. And I mean, you had Calipari get tossed in half minutes into the game. And I'm like, oh, boy, this is going to be a very good Saturday, Chris. So you had a coach getting tossed early, a Duke controversial play, which we will get to. OU went down again. Road wins actually happened. And, last week when we were doing our show, Chris, it wasn't that I forgot to tell you during our show of five great road wins, but I honestly couldn't find any. Last week I found two decent road wins that I was kind of stretching it out. So when we went on our show, I'm like, God, I'm not going to break down a show segment for two, kind of half-assed wins. This week there actually were five quality wins. So overall, I thought that this Saturday really brought a tremendous amount of games. Clearly, they call this upcoming week rivalry week. Being a Tar Heel fan, obviously, I have one date circled on my calendar. It's hard to really trump the rivalry of Carolina Duke in college basketball. And there are certainly our others, but this is kind of tomorrow is kind of like a Christmas to me. I essentially get three Christmases a year because I get Christmas Day with my family, and Duke and Carolina play twice. That is honestly kind of a holiday to me, so I'm looking forward to it. But overall, I'm with you, bud. We had good upsets occur. I felt that the bubble is now getting bigger and more of a cluster bleep, and it's just been a very fun, entertaining weekend. And part of it's on the schedules, part of it is on teams being kind of in a good frame of mind and a good mindset to play good games. But yeah, last Saturday was very entertaining, buddy, and I'm not sure where you want to start on that. Clearly, a lot of talking points, and like I said, the bubble is just becoming bigger, and I'm not quite sure why, but it's becoming more of a mess, which should make for entertaining drama. As we, as you said, we have a month to go until the big tournament begins.
Well, I mean, the parity is one reason. Two, teams, younger teams improving as the season go on. Obviously, two teams that are ranked in the top 25 that can't go past the tournament as well. So they're out. So it's you could really start in a variety of places, but. I think we got to start with the marquee matchup per se. There were several of them, but obviously the Kansas-Oklahoma rematch is something that we got to. I think we should start right there. And if you look at the shooting from both sides, now this we knew they'd be jacking up shots in this one. This wasn't going to be a surprise on this, just based off the first game and the two teams' offense and whatnot. But they jacked them up, especially from three-point range. And overall, Oklahoma shot 33%. Obviously, their guy Buddy struggled majorly in the first half, had a very solid second half, minus the miss on the free throw line in the clutch, but 10 for 32 and 11 for 26. Now, 11 for 26 looks good, because of the percentage, and that's basically what you got to look at when it comes to three-point shots, but you can look at it that way sometimes, and sometimes I feel like in this game, I think it was just a tad too many, especially this wasn't as high-paced just because, really, I think Oklahoma wasn't hitting their shots, to add to that. But it was kind of helter-skelter when you have some missed shots, especially from a team that shoots the ball very well. And so, you can get on the run and whatnot. Not that it was just straight fast break and it was super high scoring. But to me, I thought Kansas at times settled in kind of a half break. Three-pointers too much. I think both teams did. But when you have, I'm not going to say like they had this commanding lead once they got into the game more. Of course, they started out great. Kansas started out 20-6. Oklahoma was 2 of 19 to start with, 0 of 6 for Buddy. He was 6 for 6 from the free throw line. But just to kind of pass it to you, we're sitting at halftime, and Oklahoma had made a nice push to get back in the game considering the 26 start and considering that Buddy doesn't even have a field goal at that time. So you're sitting at 38-33, Kansas up. Kansas shooting 54% at that time and 27%. The thing that kept them alive and kept them around, really, was the free throw line. Oklahoma 15-18 from the line just at halftime compared to 2 of 4 from Kansas. So that kept them in there. And then Buddy started going off. Also, Isaiah Cousins. I'm going to pass it to you and let you talk about the game as well. Just a back-and-forth, fun game. Came all the way down the wire once again in this one.
Yeah, you know, I guess I got a lot to say, Crystal. I'll start off with one point.
It's a long game. There's a lot going into it. There's a couple players that we got to talk about for Kansas, too, that were especially one.
Absolutely. And I think before I get to the game, one point I want to make is in college football, you know, there's trends a lot, where maybe a team that's very good continually has a sluggish first half, but in the second half they, you know, cliche term, they turn on the switch and they kick butt in the second half and the team wins. You know, when you look back at Oklahoma's last couple of games, excluding TCU, who's just very bad this year, they started off slow against LSU. They started off slow against Kansas State. They started off awfully slow against Texas, and now they start off slow against Kansas. Not that Texas, Kansas, LSU are joke of the teams, but we're supposed to believe that this Oklahoma team has potential to win a title, which I think on paper and looking at the resume, they do. But you now have 4 games in a row where you've come out relatively flat for the skill you have. That is somewhat of a concern. I know that teams have cold nights of shooting and stuff happens, but I think there's a little bit more to it of maybe they are starting to rely too much on Buddy Hield, or maybe there is something to where the offense is in kind of a funk, and we kind of look past it because he'll find the ways to help this team win games. But relatively, if you're a coach and you've had 4 out of 5 games, including one versus a trash team, where you come out slow, you know, when they were playing Texas, they were down like 13-2. So I think there might be something wrong with this Oklahoma offense that's getting shadowed over the fact that he's a hell of a player and can be able to step it up in a clutch moment when he needs to. So aside from that, Chris, going in the game, I'm with you. Yeah, Oklahoma started 2 for 19 again. Like, holy cow! The one player in Oklahoma I'm honestly getting tired of hearing about, who hasn't done anything for me all year, is the Spangler guy. Every game I watch Oklahoma play, I notice that Isaiah Cousins is a pretty damn good point guard, in my opinion, and Buddy Hield's probably the best scorer in college basketball. But I also hear every game about how great Spangler is. The guy shoots threes and misses them a lot. He barely ever moves the ball on offense. I never see him make a lot of great plays on D. So I feel people talk about him like he's this third piece of his magical team. But until he actually steps up and does something in a game, I'm honestly just getting sick of announcers talking about how great he is, because I hear it every single game he plays. For this game itself, though, obviously, as you mentioned, Buddy Hield turned it on in the second half. Isaiah Cousins did very well with him. It was a good game of runs. I will give Kansas credit to look at the other end of the spectrum, Chris. For a while, Kansas got smoked a lot on the road against teams that they felt they probably could have beat. This clearly shows they have the capability to win on the road because they were able to withstand a couple of OU runs. I know in the second half of that game, OU, as you mentioned, was down 5 at half. They were able to go up 5 or 6 a couple of times, and Kansas was able to retreat and make the game back to a tie or a 1 or 2 point lead. Clearly, the stud of the game was that Deontay Graham for Kansas, whose job was to shut down Buddy Hield, which he did pretty well, as good as you can expect. You know, with Buddy Hield, it's kind of like the Jordan or LeBron theory, and not that he's up to that par, but you're never going to make it necessarily Buddy Hield score 0 points in the game, but you can do your best to fluster him and make him kind of get out of his rhythm. And I thought Graham did that, and to top it off, Graham also led the way for Kansas for scoring and by 3-pointers. And I'll make this point, you know, I'll throw it back to you, Bud, was, you know, Deontay Graham was I think he hit 6 or 7 threes in the game, and it was basically all off pick and rolls. And if you watch NBA, it's now basically become a pick and roll league. That basically runs the NBA. If you can't defend the pick and roll, you're screwed. And if you can run it well, you're going to score. I don't think Oklahoma necessarily had a good game plan because almost every three that Graham hit, they went under the pick and roll. And the announcers were even hyping on it. I think it was Billis and Sean, I'm drawing a blank on him, but the guy that's digging into Billis were like, God, you can't keep going under pick and rolls on this guy. He's hurt you every time. And when that guy hit a couple more threes to kind of ice the game for them or give Kansas a big lead, it's like, dude, if a guy's hit four threes on you, you got to start covering the pick and roll. So I know this is kind of a smaller aspect, but it's a part of the game where if you don't know how to defend a pick and roll, it can really hurt you, Chris. And I thought that Oklahoma made a poor adjustment on defending the pick and roll because if you're Kansas, well, God, let's keep doing it. They're going to roll over the top on it. Let's keep busting threes. And they did, and that was a turning point play. I said the announcers mentioned three or four times, and I was like, God, you know, that's a simple adjustment you can make over a timeout or a coaching signal for you to finish that, and Oklahoma didn't make that play adjustment.
Well, a couple of things. I mean, the best player of the game was Graham, no doubt about it. I mean,
absolutely.
To fill it up offensively like he did, like you mentioned, but also to do a hell of a job and turn Hill into, I can't even say a volume shooter because he only took 15 shots. He was 5 of 15, but considering, you know, he started 0-6, and I think it was 1 of 8 at one point, too. I mean, he did a pretty good job, you know, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Or not a pretty good job. He did about as good a job as you're going to do. And like I said, to build the offensive spark, you don't see too many people, and to talk about the league as well, the NBA, you don't, you know, that two-word, this is something I say to you a lot, that the two-way player, you know, usually really wouldn't be talked about. You'd say, I think he's the best two-way player, but you wouldn't just say, two-way player really wouldn't be in the vocab too much because a lot of people play two-way. Now it kind of stands out more, but to be able to fill it up offensively like that and still play that tight a D, I was very impressed. And maybe, you know, we talked about this last week with Oklahoma, excuse me, and you know, there is such a thing as catching up to him. It's not like Buddy Hield is a freshman phenom, right? Like, he just came and like, oh, my God. So, obviously, the guy's developed very nicely, obviously. And, you know, maybe, just maybe that they're starting to catch up to the offense in general. And they're definitely leaning on him too much. And when you get Cousins going and some other guys, all of a sudden they were right in that game. The thing about Spangler, to say you're waiting for him to do something in a game, he may be talked about too much, but he does average a 10 and he averages a double-double, Marshall. So to say he hasn't done anything in games, I'm waiting for him to do something in a game, when you're a big and you're averaging almost 11 points and you're averaging almost 10 boards and you're shooting 54%, I wouldn't say that you're waiting for him to do something in the game. But being talked about too much as far as a big, big part of the team, I can agree with you there. But when you're talking third and fourth player, I think he fits right in there. And obviously defensively and rebounding and all that, just getting production out of a big man, I think he is obviously, you know, a key part to them, but he struggled of late, no doubt about it. And so I agree with you as far as the sentiment of him getting mentioned too much. But to say you can't average a double double and not do stuff in games, you know what I mean?
That's fair.
I would probably say, especially in college, you know. But just counting these games, I'm just going to count the ranked teams that went down. And it, obviously, like I said, there were some ranked against ranked, so you're going to have falls. But it was much more than that. You had, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 because of ranked. 7, A&M went down to LSU. Wait a second. Yeah, it's a total of 10 teams that were ranked that fell. 10 teams that fell that day. And like I said, only three or four of them were ranked against ranked. Otherwise, you know, you had some, obviously Virginia went down. And let's kind of blend into that game. Virginia and Duke, this was just a kind of a standard grinded out affair that really didn't look too too different, I guess you could say, than what we thought it would be, you know, as far as the score of the game and all that. You know, Duke's obviously had their issues this year. They're right in the middle of a fairly large slump going into this game and going into this week, really. I mean, the broadcasters talked about how, you know, this game against Virginia may have been a really huge game overall. Of course it is, just because every game is big now, but the fact that they have their rival just sitting there, what was it? It's tomorrow, right? Yeah. Wednesday. So
yeah,
to me, it wasn't like this game was, it was pretty much played out kind of similar how I thought it would be. Although I thought Virginia would kind of shoot a little bit better. It's weird though, because they didn't, they shot really well, 48% from the field, but they only hit two threes. Now, the other part of that is they only took 11. So it's not like they were just jacking them up either. But to me, it was just a fairly well played game. Duke played pretty good. They jacked double the amount of threes, but they did hit eight of them for a decent percentage. They shot 45%. Not a lot of trips to the line, just a lot of, I'd say, kind of quality defense without a bunch of contact. But, you know, obviously I thought it would be a tighter game because, you know, they were on the road. I thought that was, you know, going to play a factor, of course, like it always does, like we mentioned. I thought Brogdon played a pretty good game, their guard, you know. They didn't really get much off the bench, that's for sure. Neither team really did. Obviously, actually, Duke clearly, they had a guy take a shot off the bench. That's all they had. He didn't make it. He had a rebound and a shot. No fouls, though, so that's pretty impressive. Ingram really had a good game, and Allen down the stretch got it done, but obviously the last play is what we're going to really focus on when it comes to this game. So maybe Duke found something, or maybe they were just at home struggling and showed up defensively to an extent anyway, and definitely weren't falling much. And so they played a better game than they had, but still they should have lost the game. And, you know, this was, we talk about referees. Actually, last week we talked about how some refs got some stuff wrong. I mentioned one of the calls we talked about I could at least live with because of the bang-bang part of it. And maybe this is part of, because of these bang-bang plays, you know, when Allen first went up, it actually looked like he had, before any kind of shot was actually attempted, I can't say released in time, obviously, but attempted to be released in time, it actually kind of live looked like he traveled, like even before the step. But when you break that part down, clearly it was only two steps. But he didn't technically get the shot off, but I'll give him some credit because that moment there was nowhere to go, and he was like, oh, crap, and he, like, jumped in the air kind of backwards and was like, oh, my God, I just got to kind of heave it over the top of the defense. It was really great, great defense, no doubt about it. You know, maybe this play is an example, and I believe it's a really good example of, because remember, the ref is going to be fixated on the hand because, of course, the buzzer's about the buzz. And technically he got the ball off before the buzzer hit. It's just his foot, the tippy, you know, his toes, basically, not his whole foot, but his toes, he had come down right. It was kind of a tie. And in this thing, Ty doesn't go to the runner, you know, or I should say the shooter. Ty doesn't go to the shooter in this one. If it's a tie, that's a travel. You know, that's not a play that counts. However, I'll say this, and I know it's Duke. So you're not going to be good about this. You're not going to be feeling good about this one. But if I'm a ref, I'm looking at his hand just as much as I'm looking at any kind of foot. Because how many times in a game, Marshall, do you see a guy go up and not get the ball off before he hits? It's pretty rare. Am I right? I mean, you don't really see it that much, especially at the end of games. But overall, in a game, you don't see it a ton. You see travels, but maybe not that form of traveling.
Yeah.
But you just don't see it that much. A guy go up, and you may see a guy go up and get blocked, and it's a jump ball or something like that. But you rarely see a guy go up and not release the ball. So is it – I mean, obviously it's the duty to look at both the foot and the hand, but it was so tight. I can't get overly crazy about the ref, but what I'm going to get crazy about and what I think maybe needs to get addressed here is when we have these replays – why can't we just go in there overall in this particular time and go, you know what? We got it wrong. We're in this replay anyway. We're in the booth anyway. It's not like you're on booths all the time in college basketball anyway. Not nearly as much as the NBA, but, you know, hopefully we don't go that way.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of plays into this as well. What are your thoughts on that? Because clearly the foot, if you want to call it a tie, that's fine, but it doesn't matter because there's no, like I said, there's no tie to the shooter. Once that is a tie, that means that's a penalty. It's a foul, or not a foul, but, you know, it's a turnover, clearly. What are your thoughts on that? I got to give credit to Allen to get that shut up off the glass, though, because there was nowhere for him to go. It was great defense.
I did – well, actually, I'll say this, Chris. There is a call that ticked me off 20 times more that we'll get to for this next game I want to kind of set you up for. But for this call alone, I'll say this. If Carolina's at home and we're playing, you know, Duke, and let's say Marcus Page goes up for this shot, and lets it go for the win, is any ref going to take the whistle out of his pocket and blow it dead?
I
think part of this is, and whether it's Duke or Syracuse or Kentucky, you know, speaking of Calipari, you know, I mean, there's just some parts of the team where it's like, really, is any ref going to make that call? And that pains me because as Duke, I would have loved to have seen that call get overturned, and that would have made my day. And I thought it was very funny when Tony Bennett and Coach K went to shake hands at the end of the game in the line, you know, Tony Bennett basically said to Coach K was, I'm pretty sure he got traveled there. And Coach K was like, well, I'm pretty sure he got fouled. This was a tweet sent out by a beat reporter for Duke who must have been sitting at the sidelines and overheard the conversation. So I did find that a little comical in the press conference after. Grayson Allen's like, yeah, no, I may or may not have traveled, but whatever. I'm like, yeah, you know. So overall, Chris, the call itself would have been tough to make. Like, if this was my team or your team, you know, like, imagine if, like, the Gophers were going for their first win and then this gets called to travel and you lose the game and you're like, well, son of a, you know. So,
well, you got to bring my Gophers into it, dude. I mean, we already lose enough, okay? Jesus. Just kidding.
So, overall, yeah, I mean, it's taking Duke off the jersey, that's an incredibly hard call to make. He did travel, though. Essentially, you know, he took four steps without the ball. And, you know, one, two, obviously you get one.
Well,
he took three.
He took two and jumped off it and landed on his one foot.
Oh, okay, I saw three.
Because that had been a travel then earlier. It wasn't a travel earlier. I've broken down the tape.
Okay.
He took two steps. He dribbled, took two steps, jumped, and landed on one foot.
Okay. At first when I rebounded, when I just in my home by myself, I thought it was four because I thought that that first one was a travel, but clearly you must have dribbled the ball during then, which is obviously fair, you know, fair points. But I'll just leave it at this. It's an incredibly tough call to make because, as you said, you're not looking at the foot. You're looking to see where the ball is going. Obviously, you're not going to call a foul there. You know, Coach K was like, well, I think he got fouled. It's like, well, how often do you ever see a foul called there? So, overall, This is the rule we got on. I remember having a 20-minute debate on after the Miami and Miami and Duke football game with you. We're now Duke's involved in this stuff of like, well,
same
what,
with baseball once in a while, you know. Since we're in there, let's do something. Let's do something else. Who cares? You know, see it in football too.
To what rule are we, you know, affecting this? Like, I'll quickly make that point about baseball. Like my dad, who's obviously got me into love baseball, he's like, well, Marshall, do they really need to review a bang bang call on a stolen base? Because if a guy's fingertip slides an inch off the base, should he really be called out when he's going trying to steal base in the World Series? Because it was never that way before. It's like, well, and that's a fair point, but now baseball is the point where, like, if you slide off the base, well, you're automatically out. And do we really need that? Well, now comes the point where, you know, how technical do you want to go with the review? Because there needs to be rules. Like I said, we don't need, you know, to spend 20 minutes in a booth for an end of a college football game. Well, was there a clip there or not? You know, do you make a rule for traveling too? I don't know, Chris. I do want refs to make the right calls, but, again, there needs to be a very fine line of how far do we go. So, I think in this situation, having traveling be a reviewable call wouldn't be the end of the world because that's such a substantial point of the game. So, from
and
that
it's
end,
all
I'm
right there anyway.
It.
You know, it's not like it takes longer to watch someone travel, you know.
Yeah, and it's not a call like, well, God, was that a block or a charge? You know, if you review that, you're like, well, God, that's an opinionated call to start with for the most part.
Yeah, that's
so
a good point.
Unless I do that. But I'm with you. A traveling call, yeah, that's it could be a reviewable thing, and maybe this game will be a part that causes that. Now, with that said, this is a game where I had for my road win. But before we get to Wisconsin, who played a marvelous game, there was one play in that game that, I mean, really pissed me off. Maybe because I'm a Badger fan, but maybe because, again, these refs keep annoying me this year. There was another charge call on Buddy Hield that drove me nuts, but we'll move on past that.
Well, I was going to bring that one up. It wasn't a charge. It was a hold, the one I was talking about.
Yeah, I thought Buddy.
The charge,
yeah,
I agree
Buddy,
with
yeah.
you. Because it was actually an elbow that the ref didn't even see. The guy laid an elbow into Buddy. But the other one after that guy had a hold of Buddy's armpit in his jersey, and the ref, people were freaking out about that one. It's like, dude, he had his jersey, you know? So
yeah,
it was like, there was two of them that at the end, but one of them I agree with you. Go ahead.
I just keep seeing charges. My God. Okay, so for the Wisconsin-Maryland game, right before the end of the first half, Maryland and Wisconsin were fighting for a loose ball in the court. Now, two players were kind of wrestling for it, and the referee blew a drum ball. I need to slow down so I get this out correctly. They blew a whistle, and a Wisconsin player was still on the court. Now, a Maryland player, Diamond Stone, who I'd mentioned pretty nicely so far in our show for being a pretty good player and having a hell of a year as a freshman, after he got up from fighting for the loose ball, walked past the Maryland guy, put his hand on the Maryland guy's head, and slammed his head on the wood court. It wasn't an accident. He stood
you
up.
You mean the Wisconsin
blocking
guy?
Yes, sorry.
He didn't
Wisconsin
do that to his own player.
On the court. Yeah. Yeah, sorry. So he slammed the Wisconsin guy's head on the court. It wasn't I slipped or a reflex or the wet spot on the court. He'd taken two steps, slammed the guy's head down, kept walking. And a Wisconsin guy got pissed because I think any player would defend their teammates when you see your guy get his head slammed against the wall or against the court. And that hurts. Like, there's not a whole lot of, you know, people say there's springs in courts for jumping, but it still hurts to get your head slammed down, especially when you're not expecting it. And, you know, so the Wisconsin players get really ticked off and upset, and then the refs kind of have to break it up. And they, you know, they're like, well, God, what's this Wisconsin guy overreacting for? So they go to monitor. And it clearly as day shows that he slammed his head against the ground. And so the announcers are talking, and you're like, well, God, this has to be a flagrant two, send him out of the game. Because in the flagrant one rule is a player did not make a move on the ball and therefore was intentionally trying to do something away from the ball. Flagrant two, which means automatic ejection, is a player made a move that was, like, severe, a.k.a. dirty. And that was 100% a dirty play, with no question. You can't slam a guy's head against the ground and then not get thrown out of the game. So what do the refs do? They call a technical on the guy for Maryland, and they call a technical on the guy for Wisconsin for defending his teammate. And it comes out today in the paper that Maryland is suspending their own player, Diamond Stone, for doing that. So how the hell, if you're a ref, do you not toss a guy out of the game for that? It just blows my mind. These refs keep pissing me off every week, and I know that calling blocks and charges is one thing. But this call, Chris, I mean, there's no room for that. Just like when I was watching Texas Baylor a couple of weeks ago. Texas Prince Ibe is running down the court, and he's getting ready to box himself, post himself up in the post. A Baylor guy straight forearm shouldered him in the back and dropped him. And wasn't taught, like, what more do you need to
and
see
remember Grayson
and
Allen, recently tripped that player, too.
Yeah,
Last week, we didn't talk about it. But the guy had just made a bucket. He was going the other way, and he tripped him. I can't believe we've seen so many of this year. Cheap shots.
You 100%.
I just saw. You know, I didn't see this live. I didn't see it live, and there hasn't been a ton of talk about it, probably because of, you know, how it got called or whatever. I don't know why, but I see what you're saying. Yeah, I didn't see that part actually. I didn't even see that part. He totally did. I mean, he didn't grab the back of his head and slam it like he was trying to hurt him, but he didn't need to do it. You know, it was like on the way out, like, yeah, just getting up. I'm just getting up. I'm just using his head to get up, you know. So a couple of these
I've lost faith. If you don't get ejected for pushing a guy's head against the ground when you were clearly walking under your own power and not stumbling or falling, it's one thing if you maybe lose your foot or slip on a wet spot, and it's accident. That was 100% not an accident. The announcers were like, well, God, he has to be thrown out of the game. And it's like, no, we're just going to hand out separate tees. And I think it just makes the officials look bad when Maryland suspends them a game from their own team. So I'll stop
now. Especially, like you said, when they have a review to look at. It's not like they don't have a review to look at. Here's the rule this year with that, just the exact rule. Flagrant one.
Sure.
Versus flagrant two. Flagrant one, excessive or unnecessarily. Not a legitimate play on the ball, hold or push from behind. Now, automatic ejection is excessive, severe, extreme live or dead ball stuff, extreme vulgar or abusive conduct as well, lays into that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you do actually get – and when I first saw that rule – I thought, okay, well, whatever. You know, they're just doing that. It's part of those rules that they're changing. That's cool. But then when I thought about it, you actually see a lot more scrums on the ground in college basketball, just trying to a jump ball that's been jumped. You know, they already said it's a jump ball, and these guys are still going at it. You know, so I actually thought that was a good definition of both of those, and it actually, that second one did need to be put into college basketball because of the physicality of the game. And I started thinking, I'm like, yeah, actually, now that I think about it, you actually do see a lot of scrums going for a ball, and you see a lot more physicality on the ground. So that actually is a good rule. But here they got a new rule in place, and they got a review on it, and still they can't get it right. That's not a good look. But what it is, good though, is Wisconsin now 7 in a row.
True, very true. Switch topics.
This team has really come around. I gave them credit last week, and I'm just going to continue to give them credit. Obviously, a tough go at it. I mean, you knew they were going to be young and dumb for a while. Obviously, I didn't think, and now appears to be possible. Not that I didn't think it was possible, but I really didn't feel they were going to be in the top four, you know, because they had that record going for quite some time. It's still going.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like we're finished. And now, more than ever, it looks like they can do it. They got a big game coming up to finish in the top four, something they've done for, I believe, well over a decade. I can't remember the exact record, but you knew they were going to be young and dumb because the last 2 years, a lot of that talent is gone. And obviously then to have a coaching change when you knew he was already going to be his last year or something, and maybe it was kind of weird because they showed a little bit of a sign of like, hey, wait a second, this team might be decent. So he's like, well, I don't want to make the complete announcement because then wonder if I like this club and they're young and we bring them all back next year. You know what I mean? So I'm like, yeah, I could see that. You know, I could see not wanting to fully announce it 100% all the way, but saying it's a pretty good idea that I'm going to be done after this year. But it does suck when a coach, for whatever reason, beyond health, obviously, that then it's, then it's
those late night recruiting trips, Chris.
Yeah, right. You know, that does suck. That does suck.
Yeah.
For a team, but you know, they've really rebounded, and I got to give them a lot of credit. And just to kind of, because now we're a chunk into the show, and we're still on Saturday. Let's get it through a couple of these games before we break down more games here. Villanova kept it going, cruising this year through the Big East. 73-63 took out St. John's. Xavier kept it going as well in that same Big East. They got a fairly big game coming up this week. They beat Butler, who is pretty down this year. They're definitely not the same Butler club we've seen in the last maybe 3 to 5 years per se, maybe even a little bit longer. Oregon. Oregon has actually stumbled a bit now of late, and the Pac-12 seems to be way more wide open than it did when they had that two-point lead. Stanford beat them 76-72. Oregon, you know, they
Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no kidding. He actually hit a three to get them up by three. Notre Dame beats Louisville. Another ranked team went down. Iowa State played very well against Texas. They kind of calmed the storm of their midseason slump a bit anyway. LSU beat Texas A&M in that game for Texas A&M, that Alabama game. I mentioned it earlier about the free throws. 1.1 seconds left. They get a foul, and it was a good foul. He hit him in the arm clearly. Almost kind of hit his head a little bit on accident, kind of going for the ball, but hit him in the arm. Dude's a 93% free throw shooter with 1.1. They're down by one, his team is, and missed them both, which is pretty crazy. What are the other ones here? Michigan beat Purdue. Purdue just, you just don't know exactly what you're getting out of them. They still could make plenty of noise, no doubt about it, but you just don't know. They just came off a big win, and then they kind of take a step back, minorly anyway, because Michigan's a good club too. And, man, they're doing it without their best player right now. And when he gets back, yeah, I don't know. I mean, anytime you got a good coach like that, which they obviously do, could get really interesting. Providence finally stops some of the bleeding, is able to get by Georgetown 75-72. They're almost out of the top 25 after being in the top 10. Kentucky pretty much handles it, you know, handles South Carolina a lot easier than I thought. Wichita State, another ranked team, went down to Northern Iowa, 53-50. Northern Iowa, got it done. And Texas Tech beat Baylor. Let's talk a little bit about the rest of the action, some of those road win, you know, games. Let's talk a little bit more. What did you see in that Kentucky-South Carolina game beyond Calipari getting booted out pretty damn early in that game, right? I mean, how early was it? 2 minutes in?
It was like 142 seconds into the game.
I think he had to do some recruiting, and he's like, you know what? If I get knocked out right here, I'm in this area where I could literally hit up a couple of kids here.
Yeah, you know, the reputation I have for South Carolina is they're a good team to watch, but they have a bunch of B players. They don't have a lot of just flat-out skill. And I hadn't seen Kentucky play for a while, Chris, but they're getting around to that point where you're like, oh, shit. Like, if I got to play Kentucky, I got a couple of guys I got to look out for. That point guard, Ulis, and I mean, Kentucky just looked so – in a perfect world, I guess I kind of nailed it to the point where Kentucky is getting better, and that flat-out skill they have is a level above what South Carolina has. Maybe South Carolina plays gritty defense, and they can make maybe a possible Sweet 16 run if they don't play a super talented team. But Kentucky's skill level is a step up above South Carolina without question, and that Kentucky team came to play. And you can maybe say that – by Calipari getting tossed, I maybe shot a little fire, you know, under him to get him to play for their coach who got tossed. But, man, that was tossed so early. It was kind of strange because, I'll just touch on this quickly, they called a loose ball foul on South Carolina, but Calipari was pissed from the play before when they're going up for a rebound that a South Carolina guy jumped over the dude's head. So he was trying to defend the point to where he would have a chance to have the refs give him a chance to make calls in the paint. South Carolina's a more physical team. And he got teed up, and then he walked over and pretty much stuck his face in the ref's head. And from the second that happened, you're like, oh, dude, you're going to the showers right now. So little bit of a drama to start off. It was, like you said, a pretty fun action-packed day. Moving on past that, Texas Tech, when I watched them play, they don't look that special. They have a big and Ross that can shoot threes and a point guard named Williams that can score. But that's really about it. But, you know, Tubby Smith, the former Gopher coach, I think he's found a way to just have this team grow a little faith in themselves, because they don't jump off the TV to you of like, God, this is a team that has, like, some potential studs. Like, no one really shoots the ball besides, you know, a couple of people obviously lay up some plays occur, but you're thinking, this team doesn't scare me. But they've now managed to beat Texas. They beat Iowa State, who didn't have their center in that game, but that is what it is. That's a self-imposed punishment. You can't take away the Texas Tech win that game. And now they go and beat Baylor. So I don't think, obviously, I would bet my life on it that Texas Tech isn't going to win the national title this year, but they're on the bubble. So you're thinking, you know, for a team that's not that special, if you find ways to win games and don't have any bad blowout losses, you might kind of sneak your way in. And to parallel that for another team on the bubble where you're kind of like, huh, is Alabama. I read an article from one of their bloggers talking about how Avery Johnson, our coach now, has done a tremendous amount of effort just to get people to go to the games. Like, his goal this year was to just get fans to go to the games because apparently Alabama doesn't draw that well for basketball. Now, clearly, Bama's a football college, no shock there. But they've been making an effort, and one of the seniors said, like, God, it makes such a huge difference to have people in our gym cheering for us compared to, you know,
yeah,
a quiet crowd where you maybe got moms and dads and some diehards, you know, just ragging on the refs. So they made a full invested effort to make the team play better and to get the people to go watch them at home. And they've managed now to beat South Carolina and drub them pretty well. They also beat Texas A&M, as you mentioned, with the free throw yips. And now they went on the road to beat Florida. So, again, these are steps in the right direction. Now, clearly Alabama and Texas Tech could both get bounced out first round. But right now these teams are on the bubble. And you're thinking, for schools that probably weren't expected to make the national tournament, they're sitting okay right now. Because like we said, the bubble is going to be a complete, like, okay, you got 30 teams on the bubble. Who's playing? Who's going to get that one or two wins in the conference tournament, you know? And these teams have a chance. So, again, it's a smaller notch team, but you're thinking, well, God, if Alabama can go on the road and beat Florida, who, you know, a week ago smoked the heck out of West Virginia at home, and Texas Tech can find a way to beat some of these teams in the Big 12, which we agree is the best conference in the country this year, those were quality road wins. I thought I had your knowledge. And I'll mention this to you, Chris, and we can move on, but Baylor, I'm not quite sure what to think. Because some games you see them, you're like, okay, this team's got some extremely talented athletes. God, I'm drawing a blank on their names. But they got some bigs that are just, you know, they run around like they're point guards. They're that athletic. And some games they play great. Other games you're like, dude, how did you go into halftime tied with Texas Tech and lose at home by 20? You know, Baylor will be, maybe they'll have another one of those years where they get bounced out in the first round like they did last year. Baylor's just kind of a hard team to put your finger on. I guess we'll see how they do come tournament time because they're clearly going to make it. But some games you watch Baylor play and you're like, God, they can leap out of the gym. You know, when they hit their threes, they're tough to beat. They're super athletic. But on the other hand, you're like, oh, God, guys, some games you're like, dude, should I even pencil this team in to win a game in March? Like, they're a very interesting team, Chris. So just nice win by Texas Tech and Alabama to bump up their chances and put themselves in the tournament. And if you're a fan of those teams, you got to be happy just to be on the bubble because that wasn't really expected of you this year.
Yeah, and just going back to that Texas Tech game, I mean, they shot basically 58% from the field, Texas Tech. And it's not like Baylor was slumping. You know, they almost shot 45%, so it's not like that's bummy.
Sure.
But 28-11 when it came to free throw as well, getting to the free throw, and 23-28 is pretty good too. It's like 80-something percent. So, you know, it's got to be fun for Texas Tech, like you mentioned. It's also got to be hurtful for the Minnesota Gopher fan, obviously, because that the whole ending to Tubby Smith run was a weird one. It was a tough one. It was on many levels you'd have to admit, I could see why that, you know, that maybe they need a new voice. But then you look at other levels and you go, man, was he here long enough? You know, we hadn't been in the second round. He got us to the second round. We hadn't been in the second round legally until the early 90s when it actually counted. Obviously, we know we got to the second round of the Final Four in 97, but that obviously didn't count. So,
sure.
It kind of, and then obviously where we're at, you know, was it inconsistent with Tubby? Sure, 100% it was. But were there plenty of ups and knocking off number one Wisconsin and number one at home and, you know, getting quality wins too? Yeah, you know, so it's rough, man. That's a rough one, but he's doing a good job down there. There's no doubt about it. And you're right. It is fun to be on some of those clubs that you mentioned, but you know, with Baylor, I don't know either. I really don't know either.
Yeah,
you know, I like. It's easy to say, oh, I like West Virginia better because you look at the, you know, I mean, now you can look at the standings, and of course you're gonna. But even a couple of months ago, or a couple of weeks ago, I should say, it just seemed like Baylor's just so. You just don't really know, you know, what you're gonna get out of it. It's very, very true. Now Iowa State. Got a big win over Texas, and now has Texas finally kind of hit their peak, hit their climax, and will they kind of go through a minor struggle before, you know, I could see them going through a minor struggle and then kind of popping back up in the tournament, Marshall, you know what I mean, and making some headway there. I wouldn't doubt if that's what happens to Texas the rest of the season. Not to say that they're not going to win any more games, but clearly they're not in a contention as, you know, as much as they were at the beginning of last week. But still, that Big 12, man, that's fun. Go ahead.
And in fairness, Chris, you know, I've found a way to maybe look at teams that do lose, but, you know, how do they lose on the road? Like, you know, Texas, they lost to a Buddy Hield three-point buzzer, and they played Iowa State. That game was close up until about a minute and a half to go.
It definitely wasn't a 10-point game. Yeah, for sure.
No, the score kind of fabricated that. And also, this is a game we didn't talk about, but Iowa. You know, they did lose to Indiana. But the one thing that impressed me about Iowa was Indiana went on like a 16-2 run and were up like 13 points in the first half. And that place, like you said, Assembly Hall, Indiana place can go freaking nuts. And Iowa came back to take the lead in that game like 3 to 4 different times. So I'm kind of getting nitpicky on this, but there's something to be said for
that was last Thursday, then, right? That must have been last Thursday. That's right.
Yeah, that was
Thursday.
There's something to be said for if you get down and you give up a run, like not many teams got to come back and take a lead back when you're getting housed and the crowd's going nuts. So, you know, like you said, obviously a loss is a loss, and no coach wants that. But, you know, when you look at a loss that Texas has had and Iowa's had, like, well, God, Iowa played, you know, Maryland and Indiana. And Indiana, and, you know, you nailed that on our previous show last week, Chris, was got they need a win. Like, they need someone to say, hey, guys, we're not frauds based on our week schedule. We can play basketball. And they got the win done, you know. So, but speaking of, you know, Texas and Iowa State, they both played, and then they both got tough games. So that Big 12 really is just a heck of a conference this year, Chris. And maybe we'll find out this year, and to kind of use an SEC football analogy, is let these teams beat each other up, and maybe we'll have 4 to 5 teams from the Big 12 in the Sweet 16 this year, which would be kind of a congratulations to, you know, how good the conference played this year. A lot of times, you know, you'll see, well, God, the, you know, like the Big East back in the day used to have 8 or 9 teams make March Madness every year. And sometimes you'd have 4 teams in the Sweet 16, sometimes you'd have 1. And so, of course, you'll get the ESPN talking head saying, well, God, the Big East had 8 teams in the tournament. They only have 1 left in it. You know, what a joke of year they've had. Not that that's necessarily all true, but I really think this is a year where the Big 12 is just going to keep taking punches on everyone. And come tournament time, you're going to see it being incredibly hard to knock out Texas or OU or, you know, or Iowa State. So it'll be kind of fascinating to see how that goes because they're – clearly, the reputation has perceived them as being the best this year, and I don't think at this point anyone could argue against that.
Yeah, I agree. I think that they definitely proved it, no doubt about it, 100%. Did you cover all your the top wins? Did we get to every one of them?
Yeah, Wisconsin beating Maryland, Kansas over Oklahoma, Texas Tech over Baylor, South Carolina, Kentucky, Bama, Florida was honorable mention. That last one was Northern Iowa beating the Shockers. Mm. And that was just kind of one I put on there. Because, well, obviously, UNI's good. I think they'll make the tournament. They still have Van Sleet. You know, it feels like those point guards in Northern Iowa or Wichita State have been there for, like, the last 5 years. Every year,
yeah,
Baker and Van Sleet make the tournament. but I thought that was just kind of a fascinating one, Chris, because I believe that snapped their, it was either 39 or 42 game home winning streak. It was the longest home winning streak in the country. And Northern Iowa managed to snap that streak of essentially – basically over 2 years of play that Northern Iowa to snap the longest home streak in college basketball. So that was a game that, well, Wichita State shot a three at the buzzer to tie and go into overtime, and the guy just hit the front side edge of the rim to miss, sending into OT. So that was a nice one by Northern Iowa. We started off the year really hot and kind of slumped, but clearly had a nice win, a promising one to beat Wichita, who, like I said, I'm sure we'll see them in the tournament. They'll probably be an 8 seed and probably cause someone a lot of panic in the second round like they always seem to do.
And I believe Maryland, didn't they have a 24-game home streak or something like that? I believe Maryland had a long streak going, too.
Maryland had never
since
lost
in the
a
Big
home
10?
Game in the Big Ten.
Sure.
And Wisconsin
That's
took care
years.
Of that. So,
that
was kind of a neat
nice win.
Yeah. And all those Saturday upset road, they were all on Saturday. You know, so 2 weeks ago I couldn't find more than two. This past week I found 6 upset road wins on the same day. so
that's
it made
crazy.
My segment
and
a little
10
bit
overall.
Easier, buddy.
Yeah, right.
Cool. Yeah.
Ten overall, mm-hmm. man. Wow. 10 overall ranked teams fall on that day. Just to kind of before we get into the schedule, which is locked and loaded, tonight is a Big 12. ACC the next, and if you look at Saturday too, this is just jam-packed this week, no doubt about it. Just kind of breezing through some of the standings here. The ACC 21-4 overall, 10-2 North Carolina still leads the way. That Virginia Duke game really is coming home to roost for Virginia right now because they got 10 wins, but they have 4 losses too. Which is pretty key there in 21-5. Obviously, Miami just kind of lingering. We talked about them last week. We mentioned them at least. They're 9-3, 20-4, so they're right on the cusp. Obviously, Duke and Notre Dame are 9-4 and 8-4. I'm not really going to count, Louisville in there because obviously they can't win it anyway. So what's the difference, right?
Yeah.
As far as the Big Ten goes, we have Iowa still out front, 11-2. Maryland 10-3. Indiana 10-3. And that's why that Indiana against Iowa win was a big win, though. When you come down to the stretch, because you have some of that head to head. Michigan, that's why I brought them up too. They're 9-4. And what is it, Levert or whatever the heck that dude's name is? He's
the
really
guy
kind
that
of
looks
the,
like Macklemore.
I'm telling
that's
you, this
just
guy.
Drive him.
Okay, we're talking about two different guys then. I know who you're talking about. I'm talking about the guy that's been hurt for 11 games, Levert.
Oh, I thought that was the guy that looked like Macklemore.
Unless Macklemore sat, like, in the sun for about 7 years.
okay.
And a generation came along, and then he spread more of that skin tone to his son or something. That's Macklemore. I don't know. But, no, I don't think that's
fair
the
point.
Case. That takes years and years to build up that, you know, that's why some people are black, some people are white, because of where they were on the earth, you know? And I doubt Macklemore on the earth was in that hot area recently. But anyway.
Touché.
Yeah. But I'll say this. Obviously the coaching, you know, we know how key coaching is. Wisconsin sitting there at 8-4. They can, that top four spot is completely accessible now. And 2-8-5 teams that are pretty good, Purdue and Michigan State as well coming in there. I kind of thought that Purdue-Michigan State game, it could have went either way. But if you look at that, that's one of those another bang-bang plays like I mentioned. But, man, I don't know. You know, that last call was a rough one because he did move into him rather than the opposite with that screen. But, you know, that's what some of these games come down to, no doubt about it. And like I mentioned, Oregon, they had not the two-point conversion, but they had the two-point, you know, kind of a cushion. And that, you know, in the races this, you know, this year, 2 points, two games, a lot for cushion. Plus, I think they had an extra game already won when we were looking at it last week. But now that's all gone. That's all gone. They're 9-4, but Arizona's 9-4. Arizona has a better overall record than them as well. And Colorado, a team that's sneaking up, they're 8-5, and they can close pretty damn strong. Utah's 8-5. California, USC, 7-5 as well. Wide open there. We still don't know how good the Pac-12 is. We're going to keep finding out. LSU, Kentucky, all of a sudden on the top, 9-3, both of them. 19-6 overall. Kentucky has the better record, of course, overall, rather than 16-9 for LSU. But then you have those teams lingering. It's really South Carolina because Vandy could make some noise, no doubt about it. A&M could find themselves, but literally 7-5. You have four teams sitting at 7-5: Vandy, Texas A&M, Florida, and Georgia. But really, South Carolina, LSU, Kentucky—that's what it's coming down to. And you know, if you start to line it up, well, Kentucky just beat South Carolina, so I mean, you know, that can play a role right there. It'll be interesting to see, man. These conference races are coming all the way down to the wire. And, you know, I could sit there and maybe next week I think we could break down the last four games of the season for those top teams, you know. But to me, being that we still have a chunk of time, I don't know if that's very – the way this year's going, I don't think that's really helpful to do because there's so many big games coming up. There's no point in looking past the next two games that they have because it's all right there, you know. So,
Let me ask you one question, and you might think this is a dumb point of mine, or maybe I'm just thinking outside the box and the stupidest thing ever. But what would you think if you allowed, just in the conference tournament, for Louisville and SMU to play, if they managed to make the conference tournament, the team they played in the championship just was given a spot in. You think it'd be dumb? Because for Louisville, okay, I get you can't go to March, but would it really be a harsh punishment to the kids if you let them play in the ACC tournament and if they made it to the championship, the team they played there was just given the win? Like, is that really dumb? Because I feel kind of bad for SMU, these guys who the one dude that was essentially behind the punishment is no longer there. Like, you think that would go, or is that just pushing too many things against the norm in our society that we wouldn't allow a team that's been banned to play in their conference tournament? What are your thoughts on that, Chris?
Well, it's not pushing against the norm. It's pushing against the rules, and you know what I mean? So what? Out of all these things, why would we pick one team to say, you know what, we'll give them a pass? You know what I mean? So I guess that's the problem. Why would that one team get a pass? And with the Louisville situation, first of all, you got to think TV ratings. So you get to the finals, and then, by the way, we're not having a game today. Well, you know, that doesn't line up. That's not really being – I don't think that's part of the contracts. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I'll say this. Patino, I think, is making a point here. And when he has got out of his way to say, okay, take it, put it on me. Put it on me. You know, we always say that coaches don't get the bear of the brunt of this stuff because they don't a lot of times, you know. Well, that's usually because they leave, you know, the scenario. Well, he feels like he actually didn't do anything in this situation. He's still ready to take it on. This is a perfect example of maybe in this situation we should have put it on the coach and have him suspended for a chunk of time. And same with the Larry Brown situation. You know, Larry had something to do with that, too. It wasn't just that guy. You know, there were other violations that Larry did, too. Now, some of them were minor because, you know, every year you see posts. I mean, Tennessee just broke a bunch of minor rules. Guess what? They're not going to really get in trouble. Ole Miss just broke like 17 different rules, but they're the minor ones. They're not the major ones.
Sure.
So they're going to be okay. Now, obviously, Tennessee, you know, as far as the lawsuit, that's a whole different ballgame. You know what I mean? That's a whole different ballgame. You're in some trouble there. And that Peyton Manning thing is funny because when he first came in the league, he was known as an in-between kind of, oh, your daddy's son, and also a guy that couldn't win the big game. That's how he entered the league because of what at Tennessee. You know, as the story goes, the year later, with a guy that could run in pass in T. Martin, they won the national championship the year after he left. But obviously that had, you know, his name helped bring recruits there and all that, yada, yada, yada. So I'm not trying to say he couldn't win big games at that time, but that's going to be a whole different ballgame. But I think that maybe the NCAA in this realm could have said, hey, because how many coaches say, put it on me? You know, you don't really hear that much at all. You
Very
hear it
true.
Like when it comes to wins and losses, but you don't hear it when it comes to, oh, I'm going to miss a full year. No, you know, I just think we should, you know, let's let the investigation happen and all that type of stuff. I'll say this. They sure that investigation quick. I'll tell you that. They got that shit done quick, which is kind of crazy too.
Very true.
Kind of weird. But no, I don't think you can set that precedent in this situation. I think the precedent has to be set on getting at the coach. Similar to the Syracuse situation, where the coach got a ton of the brunt as well. So I think it's a good question. It's something that's not dumb to think, or, oh, that's a dumb question or reasoning. But I think that it has to go back to the discipline of what, you know, the NCAA came down with. I think that would be the only way. Otherwise, there's so many, you know, situations like this that we could go back in time and then people are like, what the hell, what's so special about this, you know? Because there isn't anything special about it, you know?
No.
Stuff happens all the time. So, unfortunately, I'd say no in this situation, you know what I mean?
I'm still nervous if Carolina's ever going to get in trouble for the classes. Like, that was a big story a year ago and now we haven't heard a lick about it. So
Well, that tells you there's a lot of, because, you know, luckily for Roy Williams, it existed before him.
True.
You know, did he know about it? We'll never know that for sure. But
the
point is, it existed well before him, and so that's why I think it's taken so long, because they literally have to go back 15 to 20 years, and they're probably going back further just to make sure, you know?
So
I think that's
true, too.
You know? I think it has so much depth to it. We're talking 15, 20 years maybe. So they have to do their due diligence, unfortunately, on that one. But, yeah, I mean, that's usually how it works. It just kind of lingers. Then all of a sudden they give you like a 30 or a 90-day warning, and then you have the appeal process and all that. So we'll see. We'll definitely see. Tonight, we got probably about 20 minutes left of the show, somewhere in there. It's 22 minutes on the live stream. So we got plenty of time to talk about this coming week, all the important matchups coming up. And really, I mean, Purdue and Northwestern would probably be a good game on the Big Ten Network tonight, although Purdue is favored by 11.5 points. But tonight really belongs to the Big 12, West Virginia and Texas and Iowa State and Baylor. Does West Virginia have it clicking enough, being that they're still right in the thick of things in the Big 12? Have they settled in enough to get this thing done and keep their shot alive at winning the conference race? Because you'd assume now, and like I say, assuming this long out is trouble, the way this season goes. But West Virginia, this is a key game for them, no doubt about it. For both. Seeding, really, for Texas now. But can West Virginia, I believe it's in Texas.
It is. Texas beat West Virginia in West Virginia earlier this year.
That's right. can they get this done? I mean, this is a fun freaking lineup here. I'm really happy. You're right. It was that was a good game too. It was a pretty good game from what I think it was. But they're sitting at 9-3. They're right there. You know, they're tied with the Jayhawks for first place. If they get it done, they've won 5 out of 6 in Big 12 play. What's your gut telling me here? I mean, is Texas like, all right, is Shaka going to be able to keep it in, keep it all in the frame, you know, keep it in perspective the way you did when you actually broke down their losses, which they had nothing to be ashamed of?
You know, I would assume, Chris, that if you're Texas, you're feeling pretty comfortable. Clearly, West Virginia plays at a pace that very few teams do. I would imagine, barring everything goes well in the Department of Texas, that they'll be playing the same way West Virginia is playing in 2 to 3 years when Shockey gets all of his kids in. Maybe not quite as fast of a tempo, because I think, if I remember, VCU ran a little more of an offensive set. It seems like West Virginia really likes being fast on offense and defense. But I think with most coaches kind of being scared of how do you face up with West Virginia, Shaka Smart's like, guys, I coach this style at VCU. Here's what we need to do. So maybe from a strategic standpoint, that gives Texas an advantage, because I don't believe many teams have gone into West Virginia and won this year. And Texas did this, and that was kind of before we got on the Texas bandwagon of, my God, these guys are playing really good basketball. That was kind of before that trend happened. So I'm feeling pretty good for Texas. Again, you've had a nail-biter loss at OU and a very well-fought, played game against Iowa State. And from an Iowa State standpoint, Chris, I think, you know, we've kind of talked about how sometimes these games feel like must-wins. Iowa State, they got McKee back playing at center. That was a must-win for them. So Texas really had an uphill battle. So I think with Texas being at home, I like their chances. Like I said, I just think that maybe I'm looking too far into it, but I think that the strategy of how West Virginia plays is something that Shaka can probably coach his kids up on very well. And I just like the momentum, despite their two losses, to continue to go in the right direction for Texas. And I think they get the job done tonight.
And I like their point guard, too. And will they lose 3 in a row after that run? You know, I don't think it's going to come easy. We know that. But I'm siding with you there, too. I think that they'll get it done. I think Taylor will stand out guard-wise as well. Wednesday night, as far as the Big East, we haven't talked too much about them this year because it seems like it's a one-man race, or a one-team race, I should say. Maybe Temple will give Villanova some trouble at home. They're not a bad club, that's for sure. Entertainment-wise, Syracuse and Louisville, low scoring, could be fun down the stretch anyway. Nebraska, Indiana, maybe the other way. You know, Nebraska this year kind of feels like Northwestern for the last, I don't know, 6 years, you know. They're not going to get in, but they're not a bad club at all. Texas Tech, Oklahoma. That's a big game all of a sudden. Oklahoma, can they keep it going? It's all about seeding now, you know. That's for sure. Not to say Oklahoma can't win the Big 12, because they surely can. But it's a little tougher when you have two of your losses come, you know, against the team that has a really good shot in Kansas to get it done. So there's a couple of games, but really one standout. Duke and North Carolina, you look around and you're not going to find too many better rivalries than this game, especially since like right around the 90s. You know, since then, it has really produced just so many moments. I you could go back at so many different games throughout the year, but I do remember, and I talk about it, it was a double overtime with, you know, Stackhouse and Rasheed Wallace, and Stackhouse had a kind of a reverse dunk in that game that was really huge, and this, that, the other. But Duke hit a half court shot to go into double overtime, hit a almost a game winner just to get to a buzzer beater to get to overtime. Then to get the double, They hit a half court, but North Carolina ended up getting it done. But I remember who I was with and what I, you know, where I was watching that game. That's just how, and that's, I mean, we're talking 95 at that point, so 94. So that just kind of gives you a nutshell of this rivalry. Tell me what's going to happen, because obviously North Carolina, both teams kind of struggling right now in a sense. What's your gut telling you, man, on this North Carolina Duke game, number 5 against 20 on Wednesday night?
I think that that they're going to have a very hard time guarding our bigs. When I've watched Duke this year, I think besides Plumlee, they don't go down low much, and I don't think they have a very strong perimeter D. Now, clearly that's what Carolina does. It is nice to say for Carolina that the apparent slump that Marcus Page was in appears to be over. I've seen him play the last couple of games, and I'm shooting the three ball confidently. He's making his shots. So maybe whatever funk he was in appears to be gone. But I do feel, and this appears to be true almost most of the times we play them, is we have kind of a stronger front court, and they kind of base their game off perimeter shooting. So I really think that we're going to cause a matchup for them down low, especially if Plumlee gets in foul trouble, because he seems to kind of be their down low guy. I know that Ingram for Duke is a taller player, but he seems to kind of be more of a wing-oriented player. So I think down low we have a good advantage. Yeah. I just honestly think we're a better team. When I do watch this Duke team play, I don't feel they shoot the three ball as good as they normally do. I've watched a hand. I try not to miss when they play, and they just don't have that sniper who they normally do have, that where you're like, oh, God, if he's open, we're screwed. I think they collectively shoot the three ball pretty well as a team, but watching them play, I've seen a lot of games where they're just chucking up threes because that's kind of their MO, but they don't make them consistently like you would see of a normal Duke team. Obviously, Grayson Allen and Ingram are the guys that kind of get all the hype. I don't know. I could be seen as, you know, being overconfident, but I truly think that this year in particular, we're a better team. Clearly, Carolina's big issues this year have been defense. When they did play against Pitt, they seemed to show a more revitalized effort on the defensive end, and it clearly led to a better, well-played basketball game. Carolina had played three on the road, so obviously being back home helps too. But realistically, I just think at home we should beat them. Now, clearly, that doesn't mean a whole lot, because I've seen games in this rivalry where, you know, maybe Duke or Carolina won the national title on said year, but during the rivalry, the opposing team was maybe having a down year, kicked the crap out of them, even though they weren't as good of a team. So, you know, paper only means so much for this rivalry. I know that's kind of a term people use, but I truly believe in this scenario, because there's been years where Carolina, maybe like in 09, we did win the title and we were badass, but I bet if you maybe, well, actually Ty Lawson never lost at Duke, but for example, there's been years where one team is much higher than the other, but the weaker team goes on to win a rivalry game. So realistically, I just think that we have a better offense than they do this year, and they don't have a scoring threat that truly scares me like they normally do in the past. So I would expect to win. The way we've been kind of on the road this year, defense, I wouldn't I'd be surprised, I guess, if we swept them at Duke, which oddly enough is only like 2.5 weeks away. But I would like for a win tomorrow. Like I said, it's kind of a mini holiday for me. I got the day off of work. I just kind of sleep in all day and just kind of get motivated. So it's a pretty fun time. I would assume that when we do our show next week, I'll be talking about a win. But like I said, with this rivalry, there's moments we've had. I'll still never forget sitting at Applebee's with a bartender who was, I was a regular for her. She was just a really cool friend, and she was basically serving me because I was just watching the Carolina Duke game by myself at the end of the bar. And to see that Austin Rivers fadeaway three, I don't think I said a word for like 25 minutes. I just remember sitting there, and she's like, "You need another drink?" And it was just a head nod. So there was like another Captain Coke on the way. Like, and my mom called like right after the game, and she's like, "Are you okay?" You know, my mom isn't a super huge sports fan, but she knows. Like when that's Carolina Duke, you know, when I was a little kid in high school, she'd be like, "Don't bang the coffee table too hard. You're going to break it." I mean, this is something that has spread through the family, because my mom knows, like, when it's Carolina Duke, she's like, all right, I'm going to watch. You know, it's kind of that passion, I guess, a mom has for her son.
Yeah.
Like, oh, boy, Carolina Duke's on. Like, time to get ready for it. And
she's going to experience it, you know, through
yeah,
you, in a sense.
Yeah.
Like, I'm gonna try to see if he's – that's pretty funny.
Yeah. So, yeah, just looking back, there are so many of those moments. And, you know, obviously I always like to talk crap because, you know, the time that the Duke player elbowed Hansbrough in the nose and Dickie V is like, oh, that was an accident. I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, freaking Gerald Henderson elbow dropped Hansbrough. What are you talking about? So there's been a lot of moments, and I hope that this year offers some moments. But, again, as much as I would enjoy a 20-point win, I'd almost enjoy a buzzer beater just to kind of sink their feelings, Chris. So I'll stop now because I can kind of ramble on forever. But I think of the last, since I was in fifth grade, I've missed one Carolina Duke game. So for like the last like 20 years, that's because I hung out with the girl when I was stupid and missed the game. And I wasn't thinking. I was like in junior high. I'm like, oh, I'm going to hang out with this girl. But that turned out to be nothing. So I think I've missed one out of like the last like 30. So I'll be looking forward to previewing it. If we do lose, you might have to lead the way. I'll chime in after you kind of break down a little bit. I'll have my couple of quick shots. But hopefully it'll be a victorious day for my Tar Heels, who I believe, going into it, also play your Hurricanes. I know that you're more of obviously a football supporter of them, but we've mentioned Miami. Are they going to be a legit team this year? I believe Carolina's got a pretty busy week with Duke and Miami back-to-back. So that's kind of it'll be a very stressful week for my team, but hopefully we can find a way to for sure beat Duke, and then that would make a Miami loss a little less of a heartbreaker.
Well, I got a question for you. One,
sure.
This isn't the question, but it'll be interesting to see if they can get Jefferson back by tomorrow. Because no matter what you think about Duke.
Oh, really?
Another double-double guy. You know, 11 points, 10 boards. He's an experienced senior. Key guy there.
That
That's another big. I don't know. He didn't play on Saturday.
Oh.
So
sure.
I'm not sure. I'm trying to look at some stuff, and it's pretty vague right now to see if he'll play. But
okay.
My question is, when you say they don't have a true scorer, so is it Grayson Allen how he scores that you don't think he's a true scorer? Because when you average 20 points in college basketball with 8 minutes less to play than the NBA, I have a hard time thinking, and we have seen his development. I mean, that's there. He has developed. He's not a bench player like he was last year. And
yeah.
Then Ingram at 17 points, I think you labeled him properly as far as a swing guy. But what's your thought on labeling them not having a scorer you're worried about? Is it the fact that you just feel like you like the matchup against them or how he goes about getting his points? Because when you're up over 20 in college, dude, that's a score.
I think that because I'm in a group chat with my two buddies. One's a Duke fan, so we've been going back and forth all weekend. What I was going to actually text him or talking about tomorrow to watch the game was because he's, I think, I'm about 10 years older than him, so he's my best friend's cousin. But anyways, what I was going to tell him was I think that growing up watching Carolina and Duke when it was like Coda and Jameson and Redick and like guys that turned out to have pretty decent, respectable pro careers, I feel that both the teams, like, you know, just because those guys stayed for longer, I feel that the rivalry was really great back then. And when I look back at people like, you know, Rasheed Wallace or Vince Carter or, you know, or Battier or people, these guys on this Duke team don't jump off the map to me. Like, when we would play Battier,
That's not the question. I totally agree, but that's not the question.
The question is,
Allen today, 2016, why is he not considered a scorer threat?
Because when I watch him play, he just doesn't jump off the map to me as a guy that's really that good. I guess I'm biased. I guess you'd say Marshall looked the numbers, but when I watch him play,
why though? Why? What is it? Page will lock him down. Tell me. He goes to the rack. He shoots outside. Why is he not a legit scorer in college basketball right now?
Maybe he is, but I'm just too blind to acknowledge it. That's fair. I guess I just
well,
he
you know, Buddy
may
not have a great pro career. Buddy Hield, he may not. It's doubtful he'll make an All-Star game. You never know, right?
Yeah,
He just came on as a senior. He's a senior now. He just came on, Bobby Hill.
I just don't get
I'm not
scared
trying to match these guys up against each other. You know, I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying the guy can score, though. You can at least call him a scorer.
Yeah. Well, that's true. He can score, and I know he's been shooting the three ball lately really well. I guess maybe I shouldn't say he can score. He just doesn't scare me as a Duke player who I should, like, be afraid of. Maybe I should, but when I see him play, he doesn't scream at me.
I've heard you say this stuff before, man. He's about to freaking go off on your squad, dude.
If that happens, I'll eat the pie, Chris. I honestly will.
I just want to know because you were so hell. You made it very clear to say he's not a scoring threat, and I think that's a legitimate question.
In my mind, he isn't. But I'm also a Tar Heel fan who has only missed one game the last 21 years. So maybe I'm the wrong person to ask that question.
No, I hear you. It's just, you know, you got to look beyond. If a guy could score, he could score. I just wanted to know if you had, like, some detail to it. Like, well, I think, you know, Paige, the last couple of, so there's no detail. It's just straight up, he's short.
Yep.
No, I don't know.
I always tell my Duke buddy he should play in a boy band instead of play basketball.
You know, he'll probably make more money doing that than basketball. It's true.
Probably true.
Yeah, I could agree with that. And he'd definitely be able to score plenty in that. So Minnesota, I mean, Maryland's got to be shaking in their boots. Not only do they have to play Minnesota, okay, who's 6-19 overall, and it looks like we're going to be the worst team in a while. You know, we won 9 games with they were 9-20, I believe, or 9-22 with Chris Humphreys because he just wanted to get his numbers. He wasn't worried about, you know, winning. He didn't pass the ball or anything like that. He took a bunch of dumb shots. But not only do you have to go against 6-19 and you know, 0-4 in the Big Ten, you have to do it in the barn. And you know as much as I know, this Thursday the barn is going to be off the chain. People have been waiting for this matchup all year. Okay, I'm
and Diamond Stone's out for the game after he shoved the guy's head against the floor. That's a good factor, too.
That actually does help us because we can't rebound worth a shit. So here's the biggest game of Thursday night. Wisconsin and Michigan State. Yeah, Wisconsin, you know, we know that they are not the squad that they've been over the last 10 to 15 years. But they're on the run, man. Both these teams are, technically. This should be a good, fun game. Do you think Wisconsin can keep it going? Because I think Michigan State will beat them. But I just think that this little run that they've had is not going to come to an end. Just the winning streak of 7 in a row will come to an end. But I still think that they'll finish strong in conference. But I'm liking Michigan State in this game, and a lot of it has to do with the matchups. I just think they're a longer, lankier, more experienced club that has really come along as well, just like Wisconsin, different way, but they've came along since their rough start as well. We know that they had a rough start, and Valentine just keeps producing. He's got 10 or 11, 25, and 5 games. He leads the nation in that. Valentine is he's a great, this is one of the reasons why I like Michigan State. They don't always have those one done, but you can see a player who clearly, as a freshman and sophomore, is a role player. And then you start, and you see this in Wisconsin as well, both these clubs, and you can really start to see someone take hold. And Valentine is a perfect example of that. But I like Michigan State in this game. I think that they're going to get it done, but I look for it to be just a grind it out 58-56 type game.
You know, a guy in Maryland called, and this game must be a Michigan State, right, Chris, or no?
Yeah.
Okay. A guy in Maryland called Vito Brown has been playing really well lately. Clearly, Nigel Hayes is their stud. They have a very nice post guy who appears to be getting better every game in Hap. Koenig is a point guard who's been there for quite a while. But this Vito Brown guy is just a guy that can shoot the three ball really well. And I feel that, you know, at the start of the year, I felt their problem was they basically had Nigel Hayes for offense. And that was pretty much it. And then Nigel Hayes actually got kind of ticked off because, you know, I think Dan Dockage said something about him. And there was kind of a moment where I forget exactly what happened, but either Nigel Hayes got called out or Nigel Hayes called out his teammates. There was some moment of stress or pressure among the team. And since then, Nigel Hayes really stepped up his game. And I feel that with Hayes playing better, and, you know, Wisconsin normally always plays good defense. They normally don't get too many fouls. They don't do too many dumb penalties, and their turnovers are pretty low. So with the fundamental ways they play and now developing an offense with besides Hayes, other guys can score, they've been playing ball really well, and they don't seem to be razzled on the road. Obviously went in Maryland and who hadn't lost at home in 15 games, and you'd assume, you know, going in that game that Maryland would have a relatively easy victory, or per se. So I like the trend Maryland's on. I think that if you can keep spreading the ball around like they have been, they have a good chance to win this game. Now, clearly, this is a different Michigan State team than the one you and I talked about a month ago as well. But, yeah,
you were just talking about Wisconsin, not Maryland, right?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, Wisconsin.
I think it was because of the game, their last game. Yeah, okay, all right. Just making sure.
Yeah, I think this one's going to be very close, Chris. I clearly haven't watched Michigan State as much as Wisconsin. I try to see all the badder games. I remember when Michigan State beat Maryland a few weeks back. But I think it'll be a close game. Like I said, Maryland's finding ways to score. And my last point, four or five games into the conference, Wisconsin was shooting the three ball second worst in the league. And now they've really risen that percentage up to where they're shooting threes effectively and scoring. Obviously, you get hot from beyond
that's
America helps
crazy.
The team out a lot. So, yeah, they've been on a hot streak. And like I said, that Beto Brown guy has been a large part of it. So I'm looking forward to watching this game. I think this will be a good test for both the teams with, obviously, Wisconsin playing extremely well. And Michigan State maybe trying to climb a little bit further back up the Big Ten standings for a seed. And, you know, I guess theoretically they could still maybe win the conference. I guess you'd have to see how things go. But they could definitely probably finish higher than where they're at. So this should be a fun game.
Well, those two losses to Iowa, that'll mess them up for the conference.
Actually, you're right. Kind of like with OU and Kansas. That's true. I think it'll be a fun one to watch. I'll pick Wisconsin just because I've been obviously cheer for them. But, there should be I'd be shocked if either team won by more than 5 points. I think that one will come down to the wire, bud.
So I got a question for you. If you sub on Friday, what's the earliest you get out?
If I sub, it kind of depends. As of right now, I haven't picked up a subbing job. So, and I got three lined up next week. So as of now, the schedule's looking pretty open this week. But relatively, I normally can be out the door by 2 unless a teacher has a final period hour, like of 8th hour. So.
So there's a possibility that you could do that either after if you needed to stay that extra hour or do it in that gap of time before that hour kicks in like you did last week?
Yeah.
Okay. I think because of where we're at right now, if you look at Saturday, the amount of games that is on Saturday.
And it's another loaded Saturday. You're right.
I'm talking loaded. And and same with Monday. Iowa
mm-hmm.
State, West Virginia, Virginia. I think this would be one of those weeks that we should let Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday happen, come back and
sure.
do a quick review, and then go back to it because, man, we're already an hour and a half into this show, and we haven't even gotten to Saturday, and I don't have the time to make it a two-hour show.
That's fine, man. I like that idea. I actually work at 4, too, so that would work out just fine. Can I just make one point and we can wrap it up?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
All right, okay. I do this bubble talk again. I think they're just kind of like throwing names on dartboards because I keep seeing how, you know, the Pac-12 has 7 teams in. I did read an article today talking about how the Pac-12 had a decent non-conference, but I think that for once a guy like Lenardi is kind of like, well, God, I need teams to fill in the spots, but I mean, for the up and down moves they've made, and I don't think they're probably as talented as the Big 12. I find it interesting how a team like Oregon State, who I've watched play, who isn't that great, is on the bubble. Or, you know, as I mentioned, Texas Tech and Alabama. You know, they're not incredible, but they're looking at making it in. So I just like the Pac-12, like seven teams are making it from the Pac-12. I'm like, really?
So you know, it's funny. The RPI loves the Pac-12.
Yeah, that's what I saw.
I
guess I'm just a little befuddled.
And if you look at the other rankings, most of them are way 15 to 20 spots lower in other rankings, whether it's the BPI or there's a couple of different ones. But the RPI loves them, and the rest of them, they're not big on the Pac-12. I mean, I'm not, you know, considering years past, they're big on them. But if you look at what the rankings, they literally, some of them drop off 17, 20 spots on other rankings. So it's a mystery. Huh. The Pac-12 this year is a mystery, and the rankings, you know, I hate to even say the rankings because ultimately, you know, Bracketology gives you a good clue, and he does do a good job when you look at, you know, but it's not the committee putting him in, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they didn't do that good in non-conference when I look back at it. Some of them did, but others didn't. So, and they say, well, I guess the RPI said, well, the fact, even though they didn't, let's take these 18 games in particular, I think they went like 4 of 14 in those games, but it was the fact that the RPI felt like their non-conference was so much more respectable than many others, not teams, but conferences combined, that's why they got more credit. And it's like, okay, but how can you be 4 of 14 and look at that as a positive, though? You know, I don't know.
Yeah, because I've been reading the bubble watch, just, you know, kind of stay up to date for the show and for fun, just to kind of see how things are looking. And I've seen, you know, like they'll say teams that are locked in, teams that should go in, teams that have work to do. And I see that, you know, the Pac-12's got these seven teams. I'm thinking, my God, you know, that'd be something. But then in the same sense, I see Wichita State, who's been ranked, like, you know, in the low 20s this whole year. Like, and they're also a team that still had work to do. Like, really? Wichita State, like, I'm seeing these other teams that are, you know, very respectful mid-majors. And it's like, you know, the Pac-12 is going to get in seven, but a team ranked 25th in Wichita State who's got a pretty damn good record still has work to do. Like, I don't know. Maybe the Big 12 is going to sneak up on us and have some teams sneak in that we don't expect. But, I mean, it's just fascinating, Chris. The Big 12, I think those top six are in. Texas Tech might sneak in. And the SEC, we broke that down pretty well. Alabama's got a chance. And the Big 10, I think we know who's going, who's not. So I think that'll kind of be like a wild card, I guess, would be maybe a good word to use as to how that's going to break down. And, I'm with you. Just the RPI is one thing, but that just kind of made me scratch my head. But I like your idea.
I think it's the best thing to do, because otherwise we just can't. We're missing too much of a Saturday that has so much of it.
And I'm only about 27 hours away. the countdown's officially begun. Chris and I will be back Friday. I just won't pick up a sudden job because I'm pretty much working all week at the restaurant. And if I do, it'll be an early one. So we'll be good to go. Like we have Iowa State plays tonight. You know, I'm cheering for them, obviously. And Wisconsin's got a big game. Carolina's playing. And I'm hoping to start off our show Friday by breaking down a Carolina win. We'll see what happens. But we'll be back earlier this week or later this week for a lot of fun. These Saturdays have just been a treat. So I'm hoping that the show continues to be fun. We'll have lots to break down. And we're getting closer and closer to that show where this year I'll be in Denver calling Chris and breaking down what to expect in the first round. So that should be a ton of fun. So thanks for listening as always. Join us on Friday. Feel free to call in. We always love the views we get. And take care. Have a good day. Peace.